Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, I happened to catch 60 Minutes the other night, and it was one of these things where the two stories that caught my attention were both China-centric. There was Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, his piece where he said China's acting more repressively at home and more aggressively abroad, which means they're cracking down on being much more authoritative, and which means not good for us. Horrible for their people, but not great for us either. But also the other part about the supply chain, the fact that, you know, we make almost no chips, our economy's dependent on it. And I keep coming back to, you know, we should, if we can't agree on infrastructure, including broadband access, our electrical grid, then we have to do this as part of our defense budget because it's part of national security. We cannot cede these things to China or a hostile nation. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the 60-minute pieces, I've asked our good friend Emily DeBruyer to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory, their website, horizonadvisory.com. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So this Blinken thing, are we surprised by his admission? I mean, this is the Secretary of State of the United States coming out and saying China's acting more repressive at home and more aggressively abroad. I think that's a huge statement.
Oh, yes. And I think it is a huge statement and a remarkable one now, just as it has been for the past 3 months. The tone that this administration is clearly willing to take on China is pretty remarkable and I think surprising. And I think just as surprising was the tone of the 60 Minutes reporting, which also seemed entirely on board with this kind of rhetoric and willing to present it as fact, which is, all of this is a huge departure from, you know, even just a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, are we ramping up? Are we getting people prepared for the potential possibility of a war? I mean, the fact that anyone's talking about the possibility of actual war is quite remarkable.
Yes, and it's no longer an insane thing to say that China is our adversary, which, again, it was just a few years ago.
No, I would argue they've always been. I don't know when this kumbaya stuff began or ended. They've always been an adversary. They've always been the communist China. Just because they adhere to capitalist principles of greed and hoarding and screwing workers over doesn't make them our friends.
Yes, and they've always been intent on taking over the world order, but we had or have this idea that because we believe in free markets and a rules-based order, we have to cooperate with every country and their brother. But back to the war question, I think you said it well in, I think, the last segment. We are at war, and we have been. And I mean, yes, there was conversation in this interview about China's military buildup and its military aggression and the Taiwan threat, but what would be really great would be for everybody to wake up to the fact that China has been engaged in commercial and industrial war with the U.S. and with the world order for decades.
And you know, they also talked about chip production and semiconductor stuff and how, and I think what we've learned through this pandemic, as I said before, is our supply chains are very thin. And we've basically just allowed China to co-opt all of that, and we've sold it off for trinkets. And we're in a desperate moment, and they know it. And, you know, as I'm looking at this stuff, I'm going, this is a national security issue. Of course, China is going to be much more aggressive, much more willing to push us, and, you know, over the South Pacific, over the islands there, over Taiwan. You know, we can make threats all we want. Are we really going to go in with the military to defend Taiwan? I don't think so.
Yes. And are we really going to take the measures we need to take now to ensure that Taiwan's defense is credible and Taiwan has a voice in the world stage? I don't think so. We haven't to date. But then also, I mean, you framed it, I think, perfectly right there. We've talked about this before, but China is willing to mix its commercial warfare, supply chain leverage and coercion with its military engagement. And you know, this is a Chinese strategy of military-civil fusion in which those domains, their tools, their actors, but also the ultimate goals and kind of power that they develop, those are all fused in a integrated Chinese conception that's premised on developing global power and coercive leverage.
Yeah.
And so we're out there, you know, trying to figure out what is national security, what is not national security, what is warfare, what is not warfare. But these are all together under one umbrella for Beijing.
Yeah, but for me, the idea that they're eating our lunch, they are being, some of the human rights abuses at home. I mean, they're basically torturing their own people and treat their own people poorly, and basically are now thumbing their nose at us. And I had someone tell me that, well, we're now taking this position on China because of the last guy, because of Trump's rhetoric. And I would argue that the reason that we're finally waking up and paying attention to just how bad China is screwing us over is because of the last guy's failure to deal with the pandemic that highlighted our dependency on China and their supply chain. And which is why I think now a lot of people are going, hey, this has gone too far. We got to fix this now. At least that's my thought. I'm curious yours.
I mean, I think we've been, needless to say, we've been caught in this roller coaster of the past year and a half or whatever it is, where we have constant whiplash because the world is turning 720 degrees in its axis at every second, and it's overwhelming. But if we just take a step back and look at what's happened over the past 18 months and China's role in all of that, you get a pretty insane picture. You get Beijing's cover up of a global pandemic at the very least, and which then allows it to turn into a global pandemic. You get China stockpiling PPE to prevent any other country from responding. You get China then blaming the pandemic on every other possible country and refusing to allow or to create transparency within its own system so we can look at the origins of the pandemic. And you get increased information about a genocide against an ethnic minority in China. You get China stockpiling critical materials that threaten our supply chains and force our auto factories to shut down. You get every possible move that a global spoiler slash adversary could make. So, I mean, yes, we're realizing the narrative right now about China coming out of this administration is because of a very clear picture in front of us that's getting clearer and clearer and clearer by the day.
So whose fault is this? Because here's the thing. I guess it's my Catholic upbringing. I always blame myself. So, of course, I internalize all this stuff, and I think it's our fault. I think every bit of this is our fault.
I mean, there's no doubt, right, that China's good. Like, they have a good strategically of...
They play the chess game better than we do. They're literally whipping us on the chessboard.
Exactly. But yes, we absolutely let this happen. We're the global leader. We have been for decades. We have every possible advantage an incumbent power could have. We've shaped the global system. We have architectural influence in it. And yet we have been not only so blind to what the competition is and what Beijing's doing, but we've also done half the damage to ourselves. Like, China hasn't had to do it.
I keep coming back to this because I've been saying this for years, that we can't continue to give our manufacturing base away to China. We can't continue to have deindustrialization policies that give all of our ability to produce away. And it's only because, I remember stories my grandparents' generation told us about how, when World War II started, they were able to turn those factories that were making cars and all kinds of things into factories that were making planes and tanks and guns. We don't have the kind of production capability in this country right now to ramp up for a major kind of war. Not that we would go back to that possibly, but we don't have the production capability, even if we did, and China knows that.
Correct. And then when you look at how we lost that, it's not that Beijing came in here and stole it. It's
no,
that
greedy CEOs.
They handed it over in every case. Every industry that has been crippled by China just handed over its own industrial base to Beijing.
Now, I've got listeners who they're probably jumping up and down right now going, it's Bill Clinton, it's Bill Clinton. Because I got one guy who everything is Bill Clinton's fault. And now, understand, not a Clinton fan. Not on any real level. Didn't bring me strike replacement. Signed NAFTA, signed welfare reform, signed the telecom bill of 96, destroyed Glass-Steagall. We can go through all the horrible of Bill Clinton, but he wasn't alone in this hat trick of horrible that's given away our manufacturing base and basically gutted our industrial sector. He wasn't alone. This was a bipartisan effort.
Yes, and the government wasn't the check that it should have been, and the conscience that our private sector needed, but also our private sector has cannibalized itself and continues to do so in a really remarkable way. Like if you look at the auto industry, which should really have seen over the past decades China gradually eating its lunch, now that we're in an EV revolution, it seems like they're just turning to the old playbook of letting China dominate the industry chain, obtain the technology, and leapfrog in an emerging industry.
I mean, this, the electric vehicle is going to be the vehicle of the future. I think everybody understands that, whether someone want to agree with it or not, that is going to happen. And you've got the head of the UAW going, hey, we should be making that here. And I'm going, how can you make it here when you don't have the things that you need, like the batteries or the semiconductors or any of that stuff? How can you? Because we've allowed corporate CEOs in their narrow short-term interest of corporate quarterly profits to line their pockets to abandon this country and end up in China, where they can exploit labor and they can exploit lax environmental regulations, also that they can on a short-term basis make more. And as you've just said, they still haven't learned the lesson. They're still doing it.
Yeah. And
as you can tell, I get really angry about this, because at some point you go, if you keep, it's that hitting your head against the wall thing. Two things, you keep doing the same dumb thing over and over again, you get the same results. But when you stop banging your head against the wall, it feels much better. Maybe we should stop.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? And also, okay, so take this electric vehicle example, right? China has very explicitly prioritized EVs for the past over a decade, in large part because Beijing sees these as its opportunity to take over a field that historically has been dominated by incumbent players. It's hard to become a dominant OEM, even if China can cannibalize the auto parts, the semiconductor supply chain. But in a new industrial revolution and in EVs, Beijing can absolutely leapfrog. And it sees a blank slate and a relatively even playing field in which it could compete. In theory, we should kind of have that same approach too, right? Where we say, look, we've lost all these industry chains. We no longer necessarily have control. Oh, here's a revolutionary period, a relative blank slate. Let's use this as a chance to build back better and actually have control over our industrial inputs. And instead, as you said, that dent in the wall is just getting bigger and bigger.
So let me ask you the other side of this, because, at some point we're a war society. We as Americans, we like our wars. We've had enough of them. Can't we frame this in terms of this is, we're in an economic war. I think Blinken said that they're not trying to contain China, to hold it back, to keep it down, but we're trying to uphold the rules-based order. And he went on to say that, China doing all the things they're doing, they're the one country in the world that has the military, economic, diplomatic capacity to undermine or challenge the rules-based order that we care so much about. Can't we say, look, at some point, China cheats on their currency. China cheats on every front. They exploit their labor. They're destroying the environment, all of these things. Can't we frame this in a way we're trying to save ourselves and the planet on some level and turn it into a kind of a war rhetoric so idiots get behind it instead of going, oh, we just get cheap stuff from Walmart?
Yes. There's a question that Blinken got asked in that interview and that comes up a lot, which is that China is long-termist and it's strategic and the U.S. isn't. And so how is the U.S. ever possibly going to be able to compete? And I think the answer is that, U.S. non-strategic, we never think in the long term, but we can be dynamic. And when we actually recognize the need, we can flip on a switch and turn things on. and I mean, that's precisely the example you said about World War II industrial production and wartime mobilization. We might not have that industrial capacity right now, but that's a clear example of us being able to switch into gear. And that's something that China can't rival, and it's pretty remarkable from a U.S. perspective, but we actually have to have the motivation to do that, A, and then to have a playbook of what we do. And I think right now, like, you know, we should have this wartime messaging because we are in a war, and that it's just, a new kind. And I think that's being realized, and I think this, the Biden administration is doing a fantastic job of messaging it. However, we don't have a playbook for this kind of contest because it's new. And right now we're not going to win by just producing a bunch of jets in our factories that can't even produce the jets because China has the semiconductors. So if we're going to get that kind of mobilization and rapid response and actual mass social willingness to engage in the competition that we have to engage in, if we're going to preserve the global order and our own national security and prosperity, then we have to know what it actually means to do that, which
I'm with you. I have people who all the time are saying, the last guy, the former guy, he took China on. He was tough on China. I'm going, no, I think he made things worse. He identified the problem. Congratulations. The blind squirrel found a nut. But I don't think he did anything to move us anywhere closer towards confronting China. In fact, I think he was played as the useful adult that he was.
And look at how far we still have to go, right? Over the past however many years, China has continued to make the inroads in critical industry chains, but also in our financial sector, in our narrative sector, and also has been able to transfer those positions into influence over the global system and its rules, and to shape rules in its interests, and also to drive a wedge between us and our allies. And yes, the past 4 years, we did get a change of narrative. Has the problem been addressed? Not really.
No, but you and I have had this conversation before, and I'm looking at Biden's jobs plan, this $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan. And part of me is looking at this as a way to go, we're going to spend a lot of money domestically to build up our manufacturing base. And this isn't something that I think anybody's really talking about that I think is important. I think if you were to come out and say, look, this jobs plan is really about national security. It is about bringing back those industries. It's about, making sure that we have the ability to make the chips that we need, the lithium batteries that we need, the steel that we need. I don't know. Maybe that sells better. Maybe we don't get mired in this, you're just a liberal wish list. Maybe we make this about, hey, it's about national security. In fact, we need more than $2.3 trillion. We need like $4 trillion to be able to rebuild our infrastructure, and infrastructure being manufacturing as well.
Yes. And I mean, the reasoning for that, from the adversarial informed perspective, is so incredibly clear. We know that China uses its control over supply chains and industry chains for coercive leverage. We saw that in 2010 with Japan and rare earths. We're seeing it now with semiconductors. We've seen it with medical supplies. There's no doubt that not only is this a vulnerability, but China is willing to exploit it for its own ends. And there's also a whole strain in Chinese strategic discourse about how those basic foundational industrial and technological inputs are N times more important than the high-end, high-value-add, flashy advances built on top of them. Because you can't get to any of those advances, you can't get anywhere if you don't have the basic foundation. And so China is controlling that intentionally for strategic ends and with the clear willingness to use that kind of power to force us into a corner.
The last question I've got for you, Brookings foreign policy Twitter account tweeted out this Michael O'Hanlon quote. He said, "A promise by America to defend Taiwan does not mean that it could defend it." He writes, "America needs a better offensive campaign plan. The most promising strategy would center on all-out economic warfare against China." Is that what you see as the only way forward, or as one of the main ways forward?
100%. we need to realize this is a war. It's a different kind of war. And that means treating our economic interdependence as a competition.
So as a union guy, as a made in America guy, the thing that I've been talking about for all the 16 years I've been doing this program is every time I pick something up to buy it, I check where it was made. I buy the product that's made in the U.S. If I have a choice between something made in the U.S. and made in China, 100% of the time, I'll pay the extra buck and I will buy the thing made in the U.S. And there's part of me that goes, this should be the patriotic call of this moment.
Absolutely. And also be messaged as that. It should be clear when you go to buy something where it's from without you having to turn it over and look for the fine print. Yeah. And also without that fine print really getting away with murder in terms of labeling itself something it's not.
That is a whole nother conversation for another day, and I'm sure we will pick that up another time. But Emily, I appreciate your time. Always great talk with you, and always concerning and angering as well.
Always great being on.
Appreciate your time, Emily. Make sure you check out the website, Emily's website at horizonadvisory.org. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at that. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.